Don't ever invite a vampire into your house, you silly boy. It renders you powerless.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Thursday, December 23rd, 2010. You are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth Podcast, heard on this fine podcasting network, theuglytruth.podbean.com. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen, and I guess Christmas has come a little bit early for you because I'm not going to engage in my usual verbosity, I guess, for lack of a better words, and instead we're just going to jump into the business of today's program. I have two extremely important guests on with me, one of whom you deal with on a regular basis, and it is Mark Dankoff. The other one is a very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, that we are all honored to hear from today. Honestly, I can't believe he actually found time to fit all of us in for today's show. So without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring up both of our guests. As I said, one is Mark Dankoff, and the other is Philip Giraldi, who is a former, not just a CIA analyst, but a CIA field officer, ladies and gentlemen, spent a quarter of a century in the field, not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. And today's subject for discussion is Jonathan Pollard. Gentlemen, welcome to the program, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The reason that I wanted to have this discussion today, fellas, is because we have some very important and what I would consider troubling news that we are all dealing with right now. I'm looking at an article that appeared in yesterday's edition of Haaretz, which is one of Israel's biggest online news sources, entitled "Netanyahu to Formally Call for the Release of Convicted Spy Jonathan Pollard." What makes this story so interesting, ladies and gentlemen? Obviously, there have been a lot of calls for Pollard's release as of late, but none of them as of yet have been official, meaning that you have the Prime Minister actually writing an official letter from the State of Israel, not just requesting Pollard's release, but requesting it very strongly. I got an email from somebody about a week ago after I had mentioned Pollard on this program, and this person was saying, well, don't you think that you're going a little bit overboard? Shouldn't this man be released? He's been in prison for 25 years. Hasn't he done his time? I spent a little bit of time educating my friend about the particulars of this case, that this wasn't just a case of a few secrets being stolen, but actually led to the deaths of many people. So what I'm going to do, since of the three of us, the one who obviously is the expert on this topic, is Philip Giraldi. Phil, thank you for coming on the program. And if you would please, as quickly as you can, sum up why Jonathan Pollard is, and rightly is, classified as the most dangerous and notorious spy that America has ever had.
Well, there are a couple reasons for that, and there are a couple reasons why this case is as perplexing as it is from our viewpoint, which is that basically this guy did enormous damage to the United States and deserves every minute he spends in jail. Pollard is now being presented by Barney Franks and Lawrence Korb, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, as kind of a victim in this, that he only provided information to, quote, an ally, and the information was only information that was being used in their defense. But this narrative is all false. The fact is that Pollard stole this information, and initially tried to sell the information to the Indian government. Mm-hmm. He was in it for the money, and it's only since that he was arrested and sent to jail that he's become what he describes as an observant Jew, and he's playing the Israeli card as hard as he can. Mm-hmm. Now, the fact is the information that he stole was, by some estimates, enough to fill a room. I mean, if you can imagine how many documents that would be, I can't even guess. I mean, it certainly goes into the 100,000 range of classified information. He was an intelligence analyst for the Navy. He had access to almost everything. Mm-hmm. Among the documents that he stole were documents that had nothing to do with Israel, mm-hmm. and that ultimately were used by the Israeli government to barter with the Russian, with the Soviet government at that time, for the release of Russian Jews. And some of this information was extremely sensitive, apparently including what the defense plans were for the United States if there were to be an attack by the Soviet Union. So this stuff is as sensitive as could be. Pollard has sort of recanted and apologized for what he did. The Israeli government agreed to return all the documents that Pollard had stolen, but they never did so. Mm-hmm. So there's a very good legal argument for not giving in to any of this kind of blackmail that's going on about Pollard, mm-hmm. specifically that the documents that the Israelis were supposed to return were never returned, and therefore the United States government was never really able to do an accurate damage assessment.
Phil, I am holding a book in my hands that was written by the arresting officer who was in charge of basically capturing Pollard. He was a naval criminal investigations officer, entitled Capturing Jonathan Pollard. According to his book, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you do happen to have a few extra dollars, as unlikely as that is given the state of our economy these days, I strongly suggest that you get a hold of this book. It is called Capturing Jonathan Pollard. It is written by Ron Olive, and it is published by Naval Institute Press. According to him, Phil, Pollard stole not just a couple hundred thousand documents, but upwards of a million. And the information in these documents was not just classified or top secret. It was considered SCI. Would you go into that quickly as a former intelligence person who knows what that means, SCI?
Yeah, SCI is a special designation for, not as you say, beyond top secret. What it is, it means that the methods of obtaining the information were the most sensitive methods that the U.S. government has. In other words, if you go back to like to the Second World War, I think you remember the Enigma codes and everything, uh-huh. where the British were reading the German codes. Well, that's that kind of information that's so sensitive that, for example, if we were reading the Soviet diplomatic codes, it's that kind of thing. So Pollard was revealing information that was obtained by the most sensitive means possible, which means that when you reveal that to the enemy, uh-huh. to the, in this case, the Soviets, they know what you're doing. They change their codes.
Yes.
So you can't do it anymore. I know there was one estimate that I saw that the damage that Pollard did, apparently just to change our codes and things that he revealed, uh-huh. Cost in excess of $3 billion. Uh-huh. So that this was the most incredible espionage case against the United States since the Rosenbergs gave the nuclear weapon secrets to Joseph Stalin in 1950.
If I could just follow up with one more question, Phil. I had a friend who had been a career naval intelligence officer, and like you, he didn't just sit behind a desk. He was actually out in the field doing intelligence operations, and shortly before he died, may he rest in peace, he told me that as a result of what Pollard did, it wasn't just a few assets or intelligence agents that were captured. And much to my shock, he said that there were over 1,000 people working behind the Berlin Wall, behind the Iron Curtain, working in Cuba and other places where the Cold War was being fought, that either were arrested, imprisoned, or killed. And now we have this push to have this man released, saying, and of course, you know, as is typical with Israel, they're offering all sorts of excuses. Well, you know, Israel and America are allies, and we had a right to that information. And yes, it's true that there were a few people who were killed. So my question is, number one, is my friend's assessment accurate that we had upwards of 1,000 people that were directly compromised? And secondly, going through the training that Pollard had to have gone through, okay, to be able to handle this kind of information, he had to have known as he was passing along this information that people were going to die if he did it. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that. Let me take your last question first. Yes, of course he had to know that. If you're revealing the identities of agents, or even revealing enough information on the agent, you know, because when in intelligence operations, agents are given false names and everything. So in a message that you send out or something, it refers to the false name. But somebody who's clever can deduce from other information in the message what kind of access this person had and who he is. So it's you know, that's exactly what happened, and Pollard knew this perfectly well. And you know, I have heard from people who were closely involved with the damage assessment group that did the assessment insofar as they could after the Pollard case was over. And they've told me the same thing that you've heard, that certainly I can't vouch for the number of 1,000, but certainly multiple people, including American citizens, mm-hmm. died as a result of this.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I think that this is this topic right now is so important is not just because of the fact that this took place by a quote-unquote ally, and anybody who knows anything about Israel's history of waging war against America, I think they will easily be able to dispel that notion that Israel is America's ally. This really is not a case of, in my opinion, Phil and Mark, a case of espionage as much as it is an act of war against the United States. I mean, that is how espionage is treated, as an act of war. And when we look at the length and breadth of what Pollard did, and the fact that not only has Israel not returned any of these documents, okay, except for, according to Ron Olive in this book, he says that they, in the initial investigation that took place, that Israel was willing to scrape together maybe a dozen documents, something like that. The fact that they are so brazenly coming out now and pushing for this man to be released. Jeff Gates was on the program just a few weeks ago, and we were talking about this. His concern is that there is something deeper and darker behind this push to have Pollard released than simply the fact that that Israel wants to score a few points. Phil, tell me if you would, and then I'm going to go over to Mark here quickly. Does this make your nose twitch that we have this push going on where we have as many as 40 congressmen now who are pushing the president to grant clemency to Pollard, and the fact that Israel is now going to officially request that Pollard be released? Is there something that we need to worry about with regards to this?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I would argue that a lot of this is taking place because Netanyahu has people who are even more extreme rightist than he is in his cabinet. Mm-hmm. And for them, Jonathan Pollard is a national hero. Mm-hmm. And so this basically gives him support and street cred, if you want to put it that way, with the more fanatical people that support him. Now, what bothers me about this is the 38 congressmen who signed that mm-hmm. letter, mm-hmm. and the fact that our system has been suborned by Israel, and Israel has such total contempt for us that they started the Pollard case in the first place. And let's remember, it wasn't just Pollard. You know, it was Ben-Ami Kadish mm-hmm. up in New Jersey at the Picatinny Arsenal working at the same time mm-hmm. who was giving military secrets to the Israelis. It was Zalman Shapiro mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania who was selling 741 pounds of enriched weapons-grade uranium to the Israelis to start their weapons program. This was going on all over the place. And these people had nothing but contempt for the United States and nothing but contempt for our system and our security, that they get away with this, and they know they're going to get away with it, and they're going to get away with it again. This is, you know, this is a continuing story until the American people, hopefully someday, will wake up to this.
So you think that there is a very good chance, or even a likelihood, that indeed Pollard is going to be released?
I have heard that just like Bill Clinton did back a few years ago when he was considering releasing Pollard, that Obama has gone to Holder, the Attorney General, and said, what are the issues here? So obviously he's thinking about it.
Mark Dankoff.
Phil, here's an interesting thing that I found in these Haaretz stories on these most recent lobbying efforts to get Pollard released. Lawrence Korb, you've already made reference to him, the Assistant Secretary of Defense at the time of the breaking of the Pollard spy case, along with Pollard's wife, hand-delivered a letter to Netanyahu requesting that Pollard be released. Korb, in one of these Haaretz stories, indicates that the Russian link to the Pollard spy case in regard to Russian reception of American intelligence information has since, according to Korb, been debunked. Now, a year ago, there was a guy assassinated in Moscow by the name of Shabtai Kalmanovich, prominent businessman, owned the Spartak basketball club in Moscow, alleged links to the Russian mafia, shot to death inside of his chauffeur-driven Mercedes-Benz by an unidentified gunman who purportedly or reportedly fired at least 20 shots. This, of course, took place even near Vladimir Putin's office, according to the media reports at the time, a year ago. There's a statement in a number of these stories, including one in the Russian, in the Jewish Russian Telegraph, that says as follows. According to the CIA, Shabtai Kalmanovich was responsible for passing on to Moscow sensitive American intelligence that Israel had acquired from Jonathan Pollard, an American national now serving life in prison for spying for Israel. Korb is saying one thing. The CIA is saying quite another. Who should we believe?
Well, you know, Korb has been saying a lot of funny things. He says that that this has been vindicated, that Pollard did not pass this stuff and it wound up in Russia. I don't see any evidence for that.
Mm-hmm.
And on the contrary, I see the evidence that you just cited and the evidence coming from former colleagues in the CIA who say that that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I take Korb's comments with a little bit of salt. And also, you know, he's been saying some other stuff. He said Cap Weinberger was a vicious anti-Semite. Now, Cap Weinberger is dead. He can't defend himself.
Mm-hmm.
This is a comment that comes just from Korb, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said that Weinberger kind of recanted
mm-hmm.
towards the end and said that the Pollard business was not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, again, this comes solely from Korb, as far as I can tell. And there's no evidence whatsoever to support any of these assertions.
Mm-hmm. If I could, gentlemen, very quickly, I just want to read what Caspar Weinberger, who, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the assertion by Korb that Weinberger did what he did because he was a raving Jew hater and anti-Semite, Weinberger is not an Irish Catholic name. He had one Jewish grandparent, but he put America's interests first, and this is the reason why he issued the statement at Pollard's sentencing that wound up with Pollard receiving the sentence that he did. Now, pay attention to this, ladies and gentlemen. Any of you out there who are wondering whether or not Pollard should be released, let's just consider what our Secretary of Defense at that time had to say. I, Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of Defense, offer this declaration to make known to the court additional facts which have been brought to my attention. It is difficult for me, even in the so-called year of the spy, to conceive of greater harm to national security than that caused by the defendant in view of the breadth, the critical importance to the United States, and the high sensitivity of the information he sold to Israel. That information was intentionally reserved by the United States for its own use because to disclose it to anyone or any nation would cause the greatest harm to our national security. I don't think, ladies and gentlemen, that Caspar Weinberger was doing what he did that day because he hated Jews. He understood that this was the most serious thing that could be done to the United States in terms of our national security. Mark Dankoff, the question still stands to you. Are you bothered by these latest ruminations coming from Pollard supporters to get him released? And what I'm referring to here is, does this signal to you that somehow that maybe Israel is planning some other type of false flag attack? Jeff Gates makes the case in his most recent article that just a few weeks before 9/11, that Israel set up an endowment for Pollard in the amount of $1 million, and this was done in a very public way. And that Gates is wondering here whether or not this was a signal, because obviously, you know, you can't call your agents on the phone and say, okay, go ahead, do whatever it is we taught you to do, blah, blah, blah. So they look for something, just like in the Levant affair. The agents in Egypt that were tasked with blowing up these American and British buildings were supposed to wait to hear the song Old Susanna being played on the radio at a certain day, and that was their signal to go to work in carrying out this false flag attack. Do you see this push to have Pollard released as anything related to this? What does your gut tell you?
Very conceivably, and I think just in general terms that this whole business of a false flag operation on the part of Israeli intelligence to get the United States embroiled in a war with Iran clearly seems to be on the horizon. I don't know what the flag's going to be, but certainly as I read Philip Giraldi's articles and Paul Craig Roberts' stories on antiwar.com and talk to a number of people off the record who know anything at all about the subject, I think a false flag operation is entirely just around the corner. I sense that it is because Israel clearly wants the United States involved in a war with Iran or at a bare minimum to get a green light to attack Iran itself. And since American public opinion is flagging in regard to support of these expeditions in the Middle East on the part of the United States, a false flag operation that would be designed to revive American public support for this insanity would clearly seem to be indicated. And this leads me, Phil, to something that you said on your press TV interview in Tehran a couple of days ago, the same day that I was on that network. You were pointing out that when it comes to the American homeland security apparatus, that there are clearly a lot of Israeli connections in the way of companies and individuals. You cited the fact that in New Jersey, there was a guy who became the head of Homeland Security in the state of New Jersey who's an Israeli citizen. To what extent do these kinds of connections between people serving in the American Homeland Security Department on the one hand and the government of Israel on the other possibly set the stage for the very thing that Mark Lynn is referring to here, and that is the danger of a false flag operation?
Well, I think that's a really good point. I think your expression set the stage is exactly appropriate. Israeli companies and Israeli individuals are all over the place in terms of homeland security, in terms of getting government contracts for security of various kinds, of getting private contracts for security. You can't fly on an airline unless you go through an Israeli government database and might even get searched by an Israeli citizen. They're everywhere, and this has been because the U.S. government has been too weak to assert itself in terms of its own national security interests. We've bought into 100% what the Israelis have been selling for some time now, and as a result of this, we've bought into their values and also picked up their enemies on the way. I mean, Hamas is not a threat to the United States. Hezbollah is not a threat to the United States. They're enemies of Israel, but we've turned them into enemies of us because we've taken all these Israeli positions as if they're our own. And I think there's a tremendous danger that the Israelis are in a good position to manipulate these situations, either for a false flag or just, hey, they don't even have to do the false flag. They control enough of the levers of power through Congress and through the media and through their access to the security system to do all this stuff without even fooling around.
Phil, if I could, there are people who are saying that people obviously lobbying for Pollard's release who are saying that his being released is not going to pose any further danger to the United States. But yet, I know for a fact that whenever he gets a visitor, that there has to be an intelligence officer present to listen in on the discussions. And when he is visited by somebody from Israel, that these discussions are only allowed to take place in English. Pollard being released, as Ron Olive points out in his book, Pollard had an amazing capacity for remembering all kinds of details. And he made it clear in his book, and I have also heard from other quote-unquote experts on this topic, that Pollard being released would pose a continued damage to national security because of some of the information that did not get leaked out in the form of these documents. Do you have any information on that would lead you to conclude that Pollard being released would be would pose further damage to our ability to remain safe?
Well, I've heard what you just said coming from people who are knowledgeable of the Pollard case. But I would also add that Pollard was an intelligence analyst, and he is a guy that can actually go and look at a document and tell you what it means. Mm-hmm. And that's an important skill to have.
I see.
He has an ability to look at some of these documents that the Israelis still have that might still be relevant to national security, or they think might be relevant to their national security, and give them additional information. Yeah, I think absolutely that's a major concern.
Okay, so do you think, all right, then let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. Other than appeasing these right-wing nutcases in his government and, of course, the entire settler movement, what is it, practically speaking, that Netanyahu means to achieve by having this man released? Is it simply a propaganda coup where he can once again show the world, yes, the tail does indeed wag the dog, we can get the United States to do anything we want? Or do you see that there is this more practical aspect that they want Pollard, before he drops dead, to be able to decipher some of these documents?
Well, I think it's mostly the politics of it. I think there might be other elements that we don't quite understand well enough to pass judgment on, but I think it's the politics. I think it's Netanyahu is the head of a group of right-wing loonies that would be locked up in almost any other country in the world, and these people have crazy agendas. But for quite a few of them, Pollard is a national hero. And I think it's, Netanyahu only sees things to gain from this. If he gets them to release Pollard, that will reflect on his own political base, and his political base will think he's a hero. And at the same time, it's he figures there's no downside. He's got Obama where he wants him, and he figures Obama's weak and coming up for election in 2 years. And he can get what he wants, and if what he wants includes Pollard, he'll get it.
I'd like to just make a... I'll tell you what. No, before I do that, Mark Dankoff, since we only have Philip hogtied with us for about another 10 minutes, what do you think about this? Is this Netanyahu just trying to solidify what little support he may have in that country, or is there something more insidious that we need to worry about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, clearly, it's obvious just from what's out there in the public domain that he's under extreme pressure from his political right, including the statements made by this Shas party member that were in Haaretz recently. As far as anything more nefarious that lies behind this, I don't really know. But, you know, there might be one silver lining, and that is that the release of Pollard, if it does happen, might create the very sort of backlash within the American intelligence community that we need, both against this Israel first foreign policy, as well as this insane move toward launching a war with Iran. That's my hope, that if in fact Pollard is released, that there will be, both in the American intelligence community as well as in the American military, some sort of significant constituency that comes out of the woodwork that we're not necessarily aware about in mass numbers now, that says we've had enough of this stuff. We are not going to support the policies that are to the detriment of the survivability of our own country. And that leads me, Phil, to my final question for you, and that's this. In terms of the amount of Israeli infiltration that there is of our homeland security establishment through these individuals and through these companies, links direct and indirect, is there a source we can turn to, or will someone be forthcoming with information for the average American on who these companies are, who these individuals are, where they are within the homeland security establishment of the United States, that we can get a clearer picture, the average American can, of just how bad this might be?
You know, I wish that were possible. If it were easy to do, I think I would have written a book on it already. The fact is that these people, they come over, they set up subsidiaries that ostensibly look like American companies. But if you trace them back, you discover they're Israeli. And I think that the whole issue is that, you know, to find out all this kind of thing, you have to do an incredible amount of detective work, and nobody at the Department of Homeland Security is going to help you. I mean, look at people like the former head of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff. Chertoff is involved in the contracting for these scanners that go into airports. So he's constantly in a position where he's hyping the threat, and he's making money off of it. And there are a bunch of Israeli companies that are involved with all this stuff, with all kinds of security planning, with all kinds of security equipment. They have billed themselves as being the experts on security. You know, that's basically their story. And, you know, so I think that the fact is that, yeah, it's out there. It's tough to find. I think the other comment about the fact that the military and the intelligence people are starting to turn against this pro-Israeli narrative is also true, and that's the thing we have to hope for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's keep in mind that George Tenet actually threatened to resign when Clinton was making noise about possibly letting Pollard go. And also keep in mind that Ward Boston, Captain Ward Boston, who is the chief legal counsel overseeing the cover-up of the Liberty back in 67, you know, he stayed quiet for 35 years or so until Judge J. Aaron Crystal, or Aaron J., whatever it is, wrote this book on the USS Liberty that absolved Israel of all wrongdoing. So it's very possible, and as you and I have said on this program, Mark, you know, in the end, there may be a silver lining to this in that, you know, people who have got information that if it were even just a tip of it were released to the American public would really have this domino effect in making the American people understand how dangerous this relationship that they have with this crazy woman is, that this may be enough to induce them to, quote-unquote, come out of the woodwork and spill their guts, so to speak. Phil, I promised that we would only keep you here for a little bit, and I know that you're busy getting ready for Christmas, so I am going to cut you loose. If you would, though, please tell the folks listening how they can get hold of you and read your excellent work and analysis.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed being here, and I write a weekly piece for antiwar.com, and I also write regularly for the American Conservative. I have an article up today on Israel that's on anti-war. I have a piece coming up on AIPAC, which will be in the American Conservative, I think, coming out next week. So those are my two principal places. I also work with the Ron Paul people, and I write for the Ron Paul website, which is Campaign for Liberty.
Okay.
So, you know, let's keep the flag flying. There are a lot of people that are starting to believe the things that we're talking about, and they're surprised to learn it. And we have to keep giving the message. We have to keep talking about it. And we have to put pressure on our so-called elected officials in particular to stop doing all this stuff in support of Israel. It's just, it's not good for the United States, and that's really what we should be thinking about. It's just, this relationship has been a one-way deal for a long time and has done tremendous damage to the United States. And the more people we can talk to about that, I think eventually I think the truth will out.
Absolutely. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen, to say that that was an interesting and productive discussion is a severe understatement. We sure are lucky to have people like Philip Giraldi out there who are able to put the pieces of this very ugly puzzle together for all of us. But anyway, I would encourage you to look at Philip Giraldi's work. Like I said, we are damned lucky to have him around. Mark Dankoff, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you for your final thoughts.
Well, I think it's an indication of what a dangerous age we live in, and I think that the Pollard spy case, the fact that it's reared its head again, underscores the problem that we have both domestically in this country with the Jewish lobby, as well as what the Israelis continue to drag us in abroad. I'd reference my latest piece that's now out there, among other places, on the Nejad Society website in Iran. Joe Lieberman, Mujahideen-e-Khalq, Murder in Iran, and the Mythology of a Righteous Almighty America. Folks, Newsweek magazine in its latest edition virtually admits that American and Israeli intelligence stand behind these recent MEK murders of these Iranian nuclear scientists in Iran. This is the tip of the iceberg in terms of acts of terror that have taken place in a variety of locations in that country. This is what we're supporting because of the Israeli lobby. Righteous, decent Americans who don't support these kinds of things and who would never, never want to be involved in a war unless America was truly being threatened nationally ought to be rising up in arms with all of this. Let your congressman know about it. Supporting a group like the MEK in Iran or the PKK or the Jandala is absolutely unacceptable. And once again, the Israeli Mossad's fingerprints are all over this stuff. Take a look at the latest Newsweek where they virtually admit it.
Well, in typical Mark Dankoff fashion, I don't think that we can argue with any of that. Mark, if you would please stay on the line for just a moment. I'm going to close out the program, but I want to talk to you off the air.
Sure.
And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here on this Thursday, December 23rd, 2010, Christmas Eve, Eve edition of the Ugly Truth Podcast. Thank you for your time and for your attention, ladies and gentlemen. You probably won't hear from us here at The Ugly Truth until after Christmas sometime, but in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, hope you all have a very good Christmas out there. And remember, you know, this is, 2,000 years and going. We're still kicking as far as this civilization that was formed on the teachings of Jesus Christ. We're still kicking. It's not over yet, as they say. It isn't over until the fat lady sings, and we just have to keep plugging along. So have a good Christmas out there, ladies and gentlemen. And in the meantime, as we are fond of saying on this program, go out and do what you can to save what is left of this damaged and dying world. If not for yourself, then certainly for the little ones who are going to follow in your footsteps. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, keep the faith.
The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event.